Welcome to IPC's podcast, Global Electronics, The Art of the Possible. I'm John Mitchell, podcast host and president and CEO of IPC, the global association that helps manufacturers build electronics better through proven standards, certification and training, advocacy, and industry intelligence. Digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world. We need to start talking about the policy, sustainability, network, and workforce adoptions integral to developing the factory of the future. We want to take a broad look at some of the opportunities and challenges of creating and running the factory of the future and talk one-on-one with the industry leaders and pioneers in manufacturing and management. Join us in exploring the factory of the future. We're here with Michael Carano, Vice President of RBP Chemical Technology. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks, John. Thanks for inviting me.
We're going to talk a little bit about factories of the future. So let's jump right in. I'll ask you a couple of questions, and we'll see where the discussion goes. So what advice, Mike, would you give to businesses looking to succeed in the future? Or how can, and based on that advice, how can organizations measure their impact and success?
Those are really good questions, John. First and foremost, from what I see in my global travels, especially in this electronics industry, it's really about automation and it's about consistency of process. If you can automate and minimize the nuances or the little glitches that happen when things are handled by everybody and minimize that as much as possible, automation will improve your productivity, reduce your cost, and enhance your quality. So all of these things are enhanced in that manufacturing. Another thing that I would say is process control. Anything you can do to keep your processes within tight operating windows, that typically means automated controls, automated analysis, online analysis. Those are all simple things to do if you really think about it. And that allows you to gather data. And we talk about data gathering, mm-hmm. and obviously the analysis of that data. When you understand the data and you parse the data, you'll make significant improvements. But it does require change in mindset and also a change in your investment philosophy.
So you're automating, you're being consistent in your processes, and you're collecting that data. As you have, let's say you've done that then, how do I then go about sharing the metrics that might convince a new customer that I'm doing all these things and my process is better? What are the things that they ought to be measuring or sharing to do that?
Well, what they should be measuring is how these controls and this automation allows them to jump the technology curve.
Okay.
For me, you know, it's two things. It's all about yields. In our business, and probably anybody's business, it's about yields. Mm-hmm. Unless you're building one thing,
right?
Our customers aren't. They're building multiple things. They're complex. They're very expensive, and of course, they have life-changing consequences if they don't work.
Right.
With that said, you can show potential customers, new, old, current, that your processes with your tighter controls and your automation will give you not only a consistent quality product, but it also allows you to move up that technology curve. What I mean in our business is circuit boards, finer lines and spaces, higher layer counts. When you do that, you not only will enhance your image in front of your potential customers or current customers, but your profit margins will also increase.
Okay.
And that's very, very important.
Yeah, very good. Okay. So let me shift into just a... Well, it may actually be related here, but how can the industry support the idea of sustainable development, both green and long-term,
right,
and setting success in the long run in terms of workforce or technology, investments, and infrastructure?
Well, you mentioned sustainability and environmentally sound, and I think anyone in our businesses, whether they are using wet processes, dry processes, whatever, it's important to be as green as possible. Minimize the impact on the environment. Use alternative forms of energy to power your facilities. Mm. Use alternate ways of managing your wastewater, minimizing the amount of water you use. Recycle. You know, I've got a couple of customers in the circuit board industry that 90% of the water that their plant uses is actually kept in-house. It just is recycled.
They just clean it up and put it back through the process.
And some might say, well, that's expensive. But the point is, think about the positive impact on the environment by reducing your water discharge by 90% and still manage your business. Some would even argue that that water that they recycle internally is actually cleaner than the incoming water that comes in from the city. And it's been proven. So we won't go into that because that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
But you think about that, and that's a commitment. That takes a commitment by the shareholders and the ownership and the management of those companies. But they're better off for it. That also has a positive image when they go and talk to a customer, potential customer, saying, well, hey, we're green. Look at us. And somewhere along that line, someone has to say, you know, that's the kind of company I want to work with, because there's, other than just the quality that they produce, they're doing their part for the environment, and it should be a positive effect on us.
Yeah, you've mentioned two things there that I found interesting. Is, well, all of it was interesting, but two things that triggers a couple of thoughts for me. So one is, this is something they can brag about.
That's right.
And try to win customers based on this. So yeah, it might be in some cases more expensive, but you know, if many people are doing it, maybe even that works out. But if you can win business due to these being a cleaner or a greener facility, that's helpful. And then the other aspect that you mentioned is there are people that are going to want to work for your company.
That's correct. And that's, and I know you're very involved in the workforce development and the importance of providing well-trained individuals for our industry. That is an attractive aspect, particularly with the younger,
that's right,
more environmentally conscious graduates. And
the ones that are going to be living in this world in 60 years
still. They want sustainability. Yeah. They want to know that there's going to be a clean water supply for their children. They're going to want to know when their kids go out and play, they're not going to be exposed to hazardous materials or contaminated groundwater. And they want to be able to swim in a lake if they want to swim in a lake. And that lake needs to be, you know, just as clean as it was when it was put there 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So those are important things. And to me, you know, reuse, recycle. There's no reason in any material type industry, chemical industry, you can't reuse, recycle the processes that you use by just rethinking. And it might cost you a little more on a, you know, let's say a per unit basis, but what you get in the long run, and I think a lot of individuals forget about looking at the cost of ownership, the true cost. They look at what does it cost when I buy just one thing?
Yeah. The cost versus today as opposed to the long term.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Excellent. So, and this may relate to a couple of our the previous two questions, but how can governments help the industry be more successful, or what role should governments play?
Well, you know, I know we talk, and we hear a lot of people talk about, let's get government out of our lives.
Yep.
Sometimes they think, and maybe in many respects, some people think that the government needs to be in our lives because they need to tell us what we need to do. I'm kind of, I'd like to see more help from our government in terms of things like design for the environment. How can the Environmental Protection Agency, rather than being, let's say, adversarial, can be more of a partner in designing processes or help designing processes with industry, whether you're to the automotive industry or the electronics industry or the chemical industry. You know, I remember years ago that there was a project called the DFE, Design for the Environment, and they looked at safer ways for dry cleaning.
Okay.
So they went down to that level. So getting away from solvents and getting into more, you know, water-soluble, low VOC type materials. It was a great project, and it was sponsored, and people signed up for it. That's something that I like to see our government do more of and enhance the overall value of these, because we need manufacturing jobs here. We can't just be a service industry.
Yeah.
You know, we can't all work at McDonald's. We need manufacturing. But what manufacturing comes, you know, water usage, electricity, you know, but that's what built this country, and we need more of that. So we could be responsible in this respect, and government can help us with these things.
Yeah, so you get government to collaborate with members of the industry to say, okay, here are, and it could be industry experts as well as environmental experts, and you
That's
come
correct.
Together and you say, here are the best practices. If you're doing this type of activity, these are things, and perhaps there's a scoring or rewarding system where you can actually say, hey, look, we've come up with this, as opposed to being, as you said, more adversarial or draconian. You know, we're going to hit you with penalties if you don't
exactly.
live here or there. But instead, maybe there's rewards. And
exactly. And think about this: if you're a manufacturer, and you could be a 50-person company or a 50,000-person company. If you can do these things, you, like you said, the scorecard, check the boxes, maybe you have the opportunity to bid on government contracts, and maybe you have an advantage when you've checked all those boxes from an environmental standpoint.
So another incentive, yeah, another so business incentive. Yeah.
But that also means, John, that our government has to look at this and say, we're going to give some business to these smaller companies. You know, in other words, a 50,000-person company that's $50 billion maybe has a little bit more clout than the 50-person company. But if that 50-person company checks all those boxes and then can provide a quality product and service, why shouldn't
they? Why wouldn't we use them?
Right. Give them some opportunities. And then they'll feel like, hey, I will invest in this because, you know, I've been rewarded.
New customer opportunity and...
Exactly right. Recognize we all live here. We all want to get up in the morning.
That's right.
Not only go to work, we want to go out and we want to swim or go in the lake or just, you know, plant a garden and make sure that vegetables that we get are, you're not going to poison us, right?
Yep, exactly. So let me shift again just a little bit here for our next question. So we live in an increasingly interconnected, globalized world, and the future of supply chain points toward fewer silos and more cross-collaboration. How can companies integrate themselves better within this kind of network?
Well, that's a question that we talk about within our company all the time. This cross collaboration, you know, being a global economy, you know, working with customers and partners, whether it be 25, 30 different countries, it becomes, you know, with IPC, you're no longer just in North America. You've expanded to multiple European.
More of our members are outside of America.
Exactly. Yeah. More of our members are outside of America. So from a cross-collaboration standpoint, you're right. There needs to be, you've got to take the silos down. Now the question is, can you do that? Can you, and it's really about, in my experience, companies that are most successful or organizations, and I think they could be trade associations, they take down those silos and say, not everything we do is going to be coming out of this one location. Because we are, like you said, in 75% of our revenue or our customers or stakeholders are not in this particular silo. Right. So you allow those folks who are your managers and your leaders in each of those other areas to work directly with their customers and free of the encumbrances of saying you got to do it only this way, because it's going to be different in Shanghai than it is in Chicago or Orlando, Florida. Yeah. And even in Bangkok, Thailand, it's going to be different. So trust your people. Make sure I think the best thing you can do is hire good people and in those countries and let them do their job. Obviously, there's got to be some oversight, of course.
Sure.
But the silo part is tough.
And there'll be pieces of that information that you'll want to keep proprietary.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, there's other pieces that if we can have a common language or a common protocol or infrastructure to communicate it across, then allows us to move things forward as an industry.
Yeah, you go farther together.
Yeah, yeah?
And the parent can't be there. The parent's job is eventually, you know, you got to let go a little bit,
and you have to trust.
You have to trust. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. And my experience is when you do that, I've never had a situation where it was a hit below the waterline. Sometimes you got to make mistakes. It's okay. You know, if you don't make mistakes, you're never going to learn. You're not going to grow. So, and more famous people, very famous people have said that, but it makes so much sense. Test, fail. That's kind of like, I've learned that from a friend of mine many, many years ago when I got into the business world in Japan. You know, don't sweat the small stuff, he said. Test, fail. You'll get it right eventually. It's a good philosophy as far as I'm concerned.
Also lowers our stress levels a little bit.
Yes, sure does.
So finally, for my last question, what do you think as an industry we should be talking about more but aren't?
Well, talking about more, I like the way our industry is going. We really, though, and what that scares me the most is in the terms of collaboration, you know, there are still folks that are concerned in this global economy about cross-collaborating, even with, I call it co-optition. Sometimes you have competitors, but sometimes you have to cooperate with those competitors.
Sure.
And I look at opportunities to do joint projects with stakeholders across the entire supply chain. Look at the very industry consortia. Mm-hmm. You know, and IPC, I think, is in a great position to, and has been, fostering this cross-collaboration, like in standards and certification. IPC is actually a great model for what I would think is if the rest of the, you know, the industry and other industries could take that model rather than being a silo. Because again, you can protect your intellectual property. No one's asking you to give it all away.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, you shouldn't. And there's been plenty of history where people have given it all away for a dollar or less because they didn't think that it was worth it. The cross collaboration with, you know, with good cooperation across the supply chain will only make this industry better, make our fabricators, our customers, our OEMs better.
Well, and as that happens, and we talk more about that and do more about that, you know, the other piece of that that I think is interesting is, and I've talked a little bit about this before in other form, but when you have the different pieces, people bring different perspectives. And that cross-collaboration, that diversity of view, all of a sudden now we're getting a much better product, a much better solution, a much better process because we're hearing different perspectives that we're just not aware of.
Right, exactly. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, very good. Mike, thank you for giving us a look into what the Factory of the Future holds and how we can prepare. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, John. I enjoyed it very much. Appreciate it.
You can find more information on the Factory of the Future and other electronics industry news at ipc.org.